space, the final frontier. Time, the tapestry upon which it's woven. Thought, not much in any given TwerpCast. TwerpCast, the original series, a reflection of the golden age of Star Trek. I'd like to introduce you to my good friend and executive producer, Jim Caswell, who could give any Vulcan a brain fart, any Andorian blue balls, and any Betazoid an appetite for destruction.
And it's my duty as an honorary Starfleet officer to introduce Doug Zeitlin, the captain my captain. Not my captain. Oh, captain.
This year, TwerpCast has the distinct honor to be included in the 12 Days of Star Trek Christmas.
Kirok at Trek United gathered together the foremost authorities in fan production.
And somehow this included us.
To participate in a grand exercise of creativity.
And somehow this included us.
Which included day four. Four podcasts. Podcasting? Anyway, for more information about this, go to www.trekunited.com to find links to all of the various Trek Days of Christmas features.
And this includes us.
With all of the various things that we've featured on TwerpCast, Kirok was smart enough to ask us to focus in on Star Trek. Gee, what do you think would give him the idea that we'd know anything about Star Trek?
We are going to review Star Trek the Original Series as it was presented, and we're going to preview and predict the new movie.
So, seeing as you were actually alive while Star Trek was originally on the air, albeit only a year old, I'm going to let you talk about how Star Trek got started.
Well, without going back too far, Gene Roddenberry had gone from a motorcycle policeman into the Hollywood writer field and had become pretty successful at it. And in about 1964, he used his position of authority to pitch a show about a starship trekking around the universe in a wagon train that has been classically called Wagon Train to the Stars. There's a little bit of a debate on where that original phrase came from, whether that was a Gene Roddenberry phrase or a Gene Coon phrase. Regardless of the controversy, this is how the show was pitched, as a Western set in space.
In that pilot episode, Captain Pike was the sheriff. In this science fiction Western.
Actually, I think that's a very good way of looking at it. And when you look at the pilot, the doctor actually specifically brings out drinks. He was your bartender. The doctor says, you will tell your bartender things you will not tell your doctor. Now, it helped that a lot of the existing sets that had been built were Western area sets. A lot of the location shooting they were going to be using were from previously used prairie-type locations. And by the time Star Trek would get to its third season, they would do an episode, Spectre of the Gun, on a Western set. All right, this hasn't even been podcast, and I can hear the booing already. Yes, it sucked, but it was a Western episode. So NBC okays this Wagon Train to the Stars concept, and we get Star Trek pilot The Cage. And needless to say, to what he promised NBC Studios, he royally effed up. It's not to say The Cage is a bad episode, it's just outside of the fact that they are using ray guns on a barren-looking prairie ground planet. There is nothing Western about this thing at all.
He pretty much sold them the Golden Gate Bridge.
If history has accurately recorded Gene Roddenberry's intention, it never was to do a space Western. It was always to do a morality show. And the very cerebral, thought-provoking ideas already existed here in this pilot episode.
Which is probably the main reason why the networks didn't like it. We can't inspire people to think. They might actually turn off the TV! We can't have that.
Well, they actually called it too cerebral.
So they went to Gene and said, okay, this isn't going to work. Forget it. He asked, how can we make it work? They put forth some demands, including, yeah, the guy with the pointed ears, you got to get rid of him, and you got to get rid of the female first officer. No one's going to believe a woman in charge of anything. This was the 60s, folks. So as Gene said in his autobiography, he compromised. He kept the alien and married the first officer.
And recast the actress. I think something that you actually said was very poignant. This is the 60s, time of political and social strife, and Gene Roddenberry wants to tell his morality tales, and that is something that Star Trek captured completely and accurately throughout its history. There are very good episodes of Star Trek, and there are very bad episodes of Star Trek. The best of them tell these morality tales. For example, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, starring Frank Gorshin, was about people who were half white on one side and half black on the other side. And the people who were half black on the wrong side were social outcasts. He didn't hold back his punches. He hid them behind the science fiction fact that people were only half black, but he told the whole story. Star Trek was the very first time in history there was an interracial kiss on television. So, as Jim said, Gene was given a second opportunity to redevelop Star Trek as the wagon train to the stars. Gene put together a second pilot, Where No Man Has Gone Before, and this one is a lot less cerebral. It has more of the fisticuffs. It's got the hand-to-hand fighting and a lot more action in it.
All the things that Kirk became oh so well known for.
And honestly, there's nothing wrong with Kirk being the shoot first, ask questions later type of person, as long as the stories that we're telling were Star Trek stories.
Now, instead of having Sheriff Pike, you have Sheriff Kirk and his deputy Spock, and the bartender doctor is now the crotchety old doctor.
Who, ironically, was very famous for playing the Western baddie.
So you have this nice little triad of Western-type characters who are in this outer space setting.
Well, long story short, had two pretty successful seasons on primetime at NBC, almost gets canceled, and is the first show in history to have the letter-writing campaign save it. So what does the network do? Put it in a time slot to kill it.
Black Friday.
As dumb as we think the network executives are, every once in a while they come up with a pretty smart idea. Put a show on when a key demographic is known not to watch television, that show will fail. There is a huge difference between being book smart and having common sense. The network executives had that book smarts. Whether or not they had that common sense is debatable, although history has shown they were wrong in this case.
A show that they thought would disappear after the 3 years that it was on has celebrated its 41st anniversary.
Why do you think that Star Trek has captured the imagination of baby boomers, of Generation X?
I think a good reason why it has been so successful all these years is what I like to attribute to Roddenberry's dream. Over the years, tons of people have claimed to know Gene Roddenberry's dream. Supposedly, Rick Berman even was living up to Gene Roddenberry's dream the way that he understood it. He failed miserably, but he was doing what he thought was right. Heck! For us here at Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, when we sat down to create Star Trek Eras, we wanted to get back to what we saw as Gene Roddenberry's dream. So, some of the key elements that we focused in on were a positive future, doing social commentary, and the fact that it is a united world, or universe, in that the enemies of today are your allies of tomorrow.
You've hit the nail on the head. The main difference between the original series and pretty much everything that's come after that, including to some extent the later episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, the production turned dark. It was a dark, bleak future. And that's something that really is not in any of the original series or the original movies. Just to give a couple of examples, in Star Trek II, Carol Marcus calls Captain Kirk an overgrown Boy Scout. That is really everything that Captain Kirk had done beforehand, was that of an overgrown Boy Scout. To hit on your enemies of the present or your allies of the future, Star Trek VI. Kirk's main nemesis, the Klingon. For 30 years, he has hated them. Spock says, "They're dying, Jim." To which he responds, "Let them die." This is a bridging episode where Kirk finally realizes maybe there's more to the Klingons than just hate, than just violence. And if we let them in, if we help them, they can be our allies.
There are examples of this through all of the generations of Star Trek. Some of them are very good. Look back at the original series. In the 1960s, in the middle of the Cold War, who is sitting on the bridge as an equal with the Anglo-Saxon Captain Kirk? You have a Russian. Our number one enemy of that time is treated as an equal.
You've got an African-American woman during a period of time where civil rights is one of the highest conflicts in the nation. You have a Japanese person on there just 20 years after Pearl Harbor.
It was a perfect example of a one world united together, living in peaceful coexistence. By the time Next Generation rolls around, who's on the bridge standing right behind Captain Picard but a Klingon? The enemies of old are your allies of today.
Conflict does not have to be on the bridge. It can be between the bridge crew and the guest star of the week.
You don't have to have everyone fighting with one another. While the Ferengi were a laughable first season foe on Next Generation, they really hit their stride aboard Deep Space Nine, and then things kind of started going downhill. I appreciated the effort of Seven of Nine on Voyager. It just wasn't nearly as good of a transition.
Well, without getting too far off the original series, the main problem with 709 wasn't the intention to include a Borg, a current enemy. The intention was to get eye candy and put a woman with a large chest and a cat suit on the bridge.
In that regard, they succeeded wonderfully. But in the way of story development, she became like Wesley.
For Jeri Ryan as an actress and her skill set, I would say that she was a woman with a very large chest and a cat suit.
Now, while I enjoyed Star Trek Enterprise, I enjoyed it a whole lot more than Voyager. The idea of trying to take this method and go backwards was...
Let's see. We're going to have a dark prequel, happy-go-lucky Enterprise the original series, and dark sequels. Judith and Garfield Rhys Stevens really saved Season 4.
I liked Seasons 1 and 2, hated Season 3, loved Season 4.
Judith and Garfield Rhys Stevens, these people have actually seen Star Trek. They actually understand Star Trek, and if you want to read some of the best Star Trek novelizations out there, I highly recommend anything that is written by them or ghosted by them. I.e., you can actually read the William Shatner stuff, because most of it's written by Judith and Garfield Rhys Stevens.
Getting back to my earlier point, the friend of the future, the Vulcans, first and second season, they tried to put them at odds with the Earthlings so that this enemies of the present, friends of the future thing was working in reverse. It was a little strained, but again, you had an attractive blonde in a cat suit. She was just wearing a Beatles wig instead of having her hair pulled back.
The most interesting twist on this positive future is he included us. When I say us, I mean the 1960s us. He acknowledged the fact that race relations in America sucked. Truthfully, in the 21st century, they pretty well still suck, but they're getting better. And what Star Trek says is by the 23rd century, there is not going to be this racial tension. There's not going to be gender tension. There's not going to be border tension.
It may take us a couple of centuries, but eventually we'll get it right.
If people keep writing positive things like the original series, it very well could happen. There's lots of positive literature out there. I will agree with the fact that conflict and tension makes for good storytelling. It does not mean you have to tell negative stories. Let's look at the Bard. His plays are full of conflict and tension and violence, but they're also filled with humor and love and romance, and usually there's still that moral issue.
Actually, you just hit on something else, and that's the humor of Star Trek. A lot of people don't think of science fiction as something that can be funny. They tend to think that stories need to be cubbyholed into one specific genre, as opposed to looking at all the genres and figuring out how to fit in what tells the best story. Some of the best episodes of Star Trek are also some of the funniest episodes of Star Trek. Trouble with Tribbles is still known to this day as one of the best Star Trek episodes.
You have other episodes which try to do the social commentary and the humor at the same time. A Piece of the Action, which is really a non-interference story. You really do have to read more into the story than what's just written because it really is a humor piece. But it says if you go into an undeveloped country and you start giving them your values and your culture, you're going to mess them up.
And that was one of the nice things about Star Trek, was that it didn't feel as though it had to be trapped into one specific genre. It didn't have to be a Western. It didn't have to be just a science fiction show. It didn't have to be just action. It could tell a strong morality tale one week and have you rolling in your seat laughing the next. And sometimes the segue between those two would be a matter of minutes.
Off topic, sort of, I love the Star Wars movies. I don't think they're good science fiction. I think they're pretty marvelous science fantasy, but fiction is very debatable anyways. But some of my favorite stuff in the Star Wars movies is the humor. In A New Hope, when they're sitting in the trash compactor and Han Solo is like, "What a wonderful smell you've discovered. I die every time I hear that." I talk about inappropriate time for humor. Here they are, trapped aboard an enemy starship, about to be compacted into a trash heap and ejected into outer space. I mean, this is a really tense moment.
And so what do? They crack a joke. That is a human reaction that I can very much identify with. I've been known on several occasions to just start laughing like crazy in situations that I just should not be laughing in. They say that there are two basic reactions to a dangerous situation, fight or flight.
Well, you could argue that that's a flight technique.
But we digress.
Now, this show lasts 3 years. It's got 2 years of good ratings. It's got 1 year where they just crippled the budget, put the show in a terrible time slot. Nobody watches it. And finally it dies the silent death. So this little tiny television show, which doesn't have enough ratings to get past its third year, generates 5 spin-off television series and 11 movies over the last 40-plus years. And this was considered an unsuccessful series. Why?
It's called the Nielsen ratings.
Boy, we've bashed them before, haven't we, Jim?
Multiple times, I think. So I think we can just kind of leave it at the Nielsen ratings. If you want more on this subject, go into our archives and find Fancast.
It's a recurring theme here. Jim and I hate Nielsen, and we hate network executives.
Hate is such a strong word. Accurate, but such a strong word.
To make the story short, at the time that Star Trek was on the air, they did not track demographics. The year after Star Trek came out, they started tracking demographics. And what they found is that Star Trek was the highest rated show in its demographic. So the people that the network was selling advertisements to would have loved to keep Star Trek on the air because their audience was tuned to the dial.
Dope! So, you will notice that we included 11 movies. We are, in fact, including the 2008 release simply titled Star Trek.
As much as Star Trek fans are looking forward to an 11th movie, this particular project has generated the most controversy of any movie since they announced they were going to kill Spock. And I'm sure that 99.9% of the listening audience now knows that is because they are ditching the original cast, for the most part. They are rebooting the series with a new cast, and presumably going back to the Academy days.
That is one of the theories out there, although...
Well, no, they are ditching the original cast, with the sole exception of Leonard Nimoy.
The going back to the Academy days is a point of debate.
Well, nobody knows. The script has a very tight lid on it.
Out of all of the Star Trek movies, this one literally has the least amount known about it. There is a ton of speculation. You can't swing a dead cat in cyberspace without hitting 20 people who have an opinion about what the plot is going to be about, have an opinion about how well the cast is going to do, have an opinion about whether or not J.J. Abrams is going to ruin the franchise. Basically, an opinion about everything.
Exactly. So why don't we start with facts? And if you would, could you please share the facts with us?
The facts include a cast list. Chris Pine is going to be playing Captain James T. Kirk. Zachary Quinto of Heroes fame is going to be playing Spock. Carl Urban as Dr. Leonard McCoy. Simon Pegg of
Shaun of the Dead
and Fuzz fame is playing Chief Engineer Montgomery Scott. Anton Yelchin is playing Pavel Chekhov. Zoe Saldana as Uhura. John Cho as Hikaru Sulu. Eric Bana as the villain Nero.
Does he turn green and split his pants?
Clifton Collins Jr. as General Ale, who is one of Nero's henchmen. Leonard Nimoy is coming back playing an older Spock. Bruce Greenwood playing Captain Christopher Pike. Ben Cross as Sarek. Winona Ryder as Spock's human mother, Amanda Grayson. Chris Hemsworth as George Samuel Kirk Sr., James T. Kirk's father. And in characters to be named later, Rachel Nichols and Jennifer Morrison. And it's being directed by J.J. Abrams.
That concludes the facts that are known about Star Trek.
Everything else that you've heard and will hear through the end of the year is all speculation, including what we're going to be telling you from this point forward.
No, actually, I wanted to talk about Ben Cross and Bruce Greenwood, both fine actors that I really enjoyed. Ben Cross was on a short-lived revival of the Dark Shadows television series, which was really good, just wasn't the original Dark Shadows. And Bruce Greenwood was on one of my favorite sci-fi shows, Nowhere Man. Two little throwaway sci-fi shows that I enjoyed.
So with everybody and their brother making suppositions as to what the new Star Trek movie is going to be about,
we want in on this bandwagon.
So here is my prediction as to the very general outline of the new Star Trek movie. I believe that the movie is going to have bookends featuring Nimoy as Spock. Those bookends are going to have him reflecting back on his first meeting with the man who would eventually become his best friend, Captain James T. Kirk. I believe that what we will be seeing is the first adventure of the USS Enterprise with Captain Kirk as its commanding officer, including a passing of the baton, as it were, from Captain Pike to Captain Kirk. I know that there are a lot of people out there who are afraid that this is going to be a reimagination of the franchise, that they're going to take the 42 years of Star Trek history
and all the fan base that comes with
and throw it right in the old toilet. I don't think that that's going to be the case. I think that with them telling the very first adventure of the Enterprise under Captain Kirk, it can fit quite nicely into continuity because this is a story that has not been told in Star Trek continuity. It has the potential of fitting neatly into continuity, as long as people let it.
I'll resist making speculation on the story itself and agree with you that it does not automatically mean they're going to be tossing out the baby with the bathwater. I love J.J. Abrams as a storyteller. I think in the beginning of this 21st century, he's really captured a way of telling science fiction adventure stories that are still smart. When it comes to storytelling, he's no Aaron Sorkin. But Aaron Sorkin is really, really wordy, very funny, and tells a different type of story than J.J. Abrams tells. I guess I would speculate that Gene Roddenberry and the original Star Trek leans more towards Aaron Sorkin writing style. And I don't mean that punchy, quick, rapid dialogue. I mean the intelligent storytelling. J.J. Abrams tends to make things that are very well written, that are very well thought out, but include a lot of action and a lot of suspense. That may be what's needed to bring a modern MTV 7-second attention span into the movie theaters to watch something called Star Trek.
Again, going back to some of the complaints that I've heard already, there are a lot of people who think that because the ship may look a little bit more advanced and they won't be wearing the velour uniforms with the short skirts, that it will somehow diminish it from being original Trek. And I guess my answer to them is, well, get a life.
I think this is a case where William Shatner did put it best, get a life. Better yet, have you ever kissed a girl?
This is several generations apart from when Star Trek originally came out. To expect things to be exactly identical, quite frankly, is stupid. We have developed far above and beyond in the way of technology, in the way of storytelling.
To kind of make your point for you, Jim, I would love to suggest that anybody listening log on to StarTrekNewVoyages.com.
Oh, most definitely. In fact, there are several excellent, excellent fan-based Star Trek shows out there, but I think what you're getting at is the fact that New Voyages tell stories set aboard the USS Enterprise NCC 1701 with Captain Kirk, Spock, the whole crew. Different actors, they are not imitating the original actors. They are playing the part, they are playing the characters, they are telling excellent stories. And it is top-notch quality. They use excellent technology. The show has a modern feel to it while still paying plenty of homage to the original series.
I really think for those of you who have not seen this, you'll be blown away. They are using what are essentially identical sets and identical costumes. They have put in new actors who are doing their own take on the characterizations. They're trying to tell similar positive stories. And they're using modern special effects. You're going to be blown away when you see them. When you realize this is a fan production, not a professional production, and you see the quality of the special effects far exceeds anything that was ever on the original series.
If you go into TWRP's Star Trek Eras section under links, we have a link to that as well as many other fan-based productions, but definitely go and see what they're producing.
And my apologies to the other fan-based productions. I was strictly using this as an example of Star Trek that can be told in a modern way with new actors. That was my reference point.
All of the shows that we have links to, we wholeheartedly endorse. They're just wonderful fan productions. And we'd go through and list them all independently here and now, but, well, there's a lot of them out there now.
And for those of you who will look them up after the show, I highly recommend you do so. They're taking place in the Next Generation era.
They take place in the original series era, the film eras, Next Generation, all the way up through post-Nemesis and beyond. So if you haven't experienced fan productions, beyond ours, of course, definitely go and check these out.
Yeah, shameless plug. If you haven't listened to ours, please do.
Plug, 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 plug.
And the shameless plug department. For those of you who haven't listened to our radio drama, Star Trek eras, please give us a listen. I think you'll enjoy it.
Getting back to the movie. As we said, there is very little that is actually known. There's been perhaps 2 weeks to a month of filming that has been done. Nothing about the script has been released. And yet, there are certain aspects of the production that you can look at and you can go, hey, I'm looking forward to that, or, oh my God, what were they thinking? Now, I know that Doug is busting at the seams, so we're going to start out with, oh my God, what were they thinking?
Winona Ryder! Alright, I love Beetlejuice, and I also would recommend A Scanner Darkly.
Don't forget Heathers.
You're right, I forgot Heathers. I have 3 shameless plugs for Winona Ryder and just spectacular movies. Is Spock's mom? I just don't know.
Zachary Quinto is 30 years old. Winona Ryder is 36. The idea of her playing his mother hurts the brain. Now, I have come up with a potential answer to this, and this is how I hope they are going to handle this. I am hoping that if they are telling this from Spock's point of view, in reflection on his life, that the point of time that Winona Ryder is shown is during Spock's childhood. A little reflection back to Spock as a child. With Spock being 5, 6, 10 years old, maybe even 15. You know, hey, why not? Okay, I could see Winona Ryder being Amanda. If they're having her play Amanda opposite Zach as Spock, there's something really kind of wrong there.
Modern prosthetics and FX are great. I think that maybe Winona Ryder has the acting range to play somebody without emotions, but playing the emotional mother of somebody without emotions, I don't know. That's just going too far for me.
I think it has certain possibilities. I mean, obviously, it's a casting stunt. I mean, come on. But it needs to be handled properly.
Like nuclear waste. You get rid of it, bury it in a vault, and you hide it for centuries.
But in all honesty, if that's the worst thing that we can say about this movie so far, that's not doing too bad. And there are some casting choices that I think are actually pretty good.
Like Simon Pegg.
He is a good example. Now, there are a lot of people who wouldn't picture him as Scotty. Personally, I think it's great. He's going to inject the humor that we were talking about before. You don't have to have it be completely serious. Montgomery Scott was always good for a couple of laughs.
Drink it. It's green.
I think that's a great bit of casting. Going back to Siler, he not only has the look of a young Leonard Nimoy, but I truly believe that he has the acting range that's going to be needed to play Spock well.
That's one thing that's really impressed me about the entire cast of Heroes, is they really have acting chops. I guess on a side note, I think that's probably what makes Heroes the show it is every single one of those actors makes the character believable. If you did not believe that those characters existed, then you couldn't believe that they also had powers.
I think that was one of the main reasons why there were so many actors from Heroes that were being brought up as potential performers in this movie. Along with the fact that it's quite obvious that the writers of Heroes are also big Star Trek fans. I mean...
Oh, just because George Takei's car had the license plate NCC-1701?
Nichelle Nichols being brought in for a reoccurring role. Yeah, they're big old geeks just like us. So there are several casting choices that I think are just phenomenal. And if they don't look exactly the way William Shatner did or DeForest Kelly, so what? They don't need to be clones. If they wanted to make a movie with the original actors, they would have cast the original actors.
If you want proof that that can be done, just Google William Shatner's DirecTV ad and look at him He certainly looks 20 or 30 years younger on his ad.
Computers can do wondrous things these days. So, in your eyes, what will make this movie a success for you? It goes without saying that good, bad, indifferent, you'll probably end up owning a copy of it.
Oh yeah, I've pre-ordered the DVD already.
But what is it going to take for you to truly enjoy it?
First and foremost, it's going to be that script. The story that is being told. Is the story going to be uplifting? Is it going to tell the positive future? Is Captain Kirk going to be that overgrown Boy Scout?
Is it going to give you a tomorrow that you will want to live in?
Because really, when it comes down to the actors, making fun of Winona aside, if they're doing their job, if they're convincing you of who these characters are, then it doesn't matter that it's not William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and DeForest Kelly.
The meat and potatoes of this is going to be the writing.
And as far as if it does turn into a reimagination, I love the original Battlestar Galactica. I could watch those original episodes over and over again. They don't take themselves too seriously. They're not the greatest science fiction in the world, but they're fun stories. That being said, the new Battlestar Galactica is anything but fun. It's a well-told story. The actors are absolutely spectacular on it, but it takes itself too seriously. It went the other direction.
As we've previously established, I love old Battlestar Galactica. I love new Battlestar Galactica. They are two completely different creatures. It doesn't stop me from enjoying them both. And I hope to be able to say that if that were to happen to Star Trek, I'd still love it no matter which way it went.
And that's the way I feel about it. If it is reimagined, but it's still telling a positive story, it's still giving you that experience of a future that I would want to live in, then it's still a success.
Personally, I'm hoping that it still falls within the continuity. But then again, I'm a bit of a continuity cop. But either way, as long as it holds to Gene Roddenberry's dream, I know I'm going to enjoy it.
Just because it's coming out 40 years later doesn't mean they're going to mess with it. Bryan Singer worked really diligently to keep his Superman movie in as much continuity to the Richard Donner Superman movies as he possibly could.
So that's what it would take for it to be a success in our eyes. What about the studios?
Oh, that's easy. Money.
Money, 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 money.
The only
money.
There is no doubt in my mind that Star Trek the Motion Picture would not exist if it weren't for Star Wars making money.
They obviously see that Star Trek is still a cash cow that they can continue to milk. All that needs to happen is for them to show some form of profit, and Star Trek will continue to live on and on and on and on and on and on and on. All they care about is the money. You want to continue to have Star Trek around in any way, shape, or form?
Go see it 3-4 times.
Spend the money. The fact that they take advantage of that situation sometimes, that brings us back to that whole network suits are evil situation that we've discussed in nauseam in the past.
Oh, we've mentioned that before?
Yeah, you see that dead horse over there with the two bent sticks laying next to it? That's our doing. The studios want the money. We want the dream. And yes, we consider ourselves fans, but there are more fans of Star Trek than just us. What do the fans want?
This is the hardest one of them all, because given the 40-year history of this show, you are going to disappoint the majority of the fans. I really think that everybody sees something different in Star Trek, and when you don't see that one element that you're looking for, you're going to be disappointed. If they don't have the woman with the big chest and a cat suit, you're going to piss off all the 7 and 9 fans. If you don't have William Shatner in there, you're going to piss off all the William Shatner fans. When you find out they're not dealing with wormhole aliens and the prophets, you're going to piss off the Deep Space Nine fans. It's funny because we've talked about Star Trek being such a positive future, and there are so many people out there that say, you know what, I don't fit in, but when I think about Star Trek and everybody fitting in this positive universe, that's what gives me my motivation to get up in the morning. There's so many of these people, but the other side of it is, if you don't like the Star Trek that I like, you're wrong.
42 years of Star Trek are multiple generations. The Star Trek original series generation is different than the Star Trek The Next Generation generation.
And despite the proximity in time, The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine are completely different beasts.
Same thing goes with Voyager and Enterprise. Everybody will call themselves a Star Trek fan, but you will have one side of the fence that is its original series or nothing, William Shatner is Kirk, and God help you if you argue with me. You're going to have your people who are saying Janeway was the best captain that Starfleet ever produced.
Yes, every Star Trek fan has their opinion, and mine is that Voyager sucks.
And we can't help it if our opinion is right and yours is wrong. That is the type of mentality that we're talking about, which is just so strange and so hard to wrap my head around. Because, as you said, these are the same people that in the same breath will say, I've never fit in, but it's so nice to look at a future where everybody gets along and everybody is equal, but my captain can beat up your captain, and you're wrong for liking that captain over my captain. Does anybody else see the absurdity here?
You know, it's true. As much as I gloat over not liking Voyager, it's not the fact that I don't like Kate Mulgrew or any of that particular cast. What I really hate is the fact that the producers were inconsistent, that in some weeks she was the action captain, in some weeks she was the scientific captain, in some weeks she was the I'm the woman in distress captain, in some weeks she was the butch I'm the woman in control captain. And I think that Kate Mulgrew got stuck with just this part that nobody knew where they wanted it to go. So it's not that I think my Star Trek is better than your Star Trek. I think what it comes down to were the production values. And of the 5 televised versions of Star Trek, I think the lowest production values were Voyager.
To argue the other side of that point, there are people out there who are young enough that Voyager was their first Star Trek. And much like your first crush, it has a special place in their heart.
The original series is my Star Trek. That being said, Jean-Luc Picard is my captain. But in my heart, Captain Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, that's my track.
And it's fun because even though there's only a year difference in our ages, I was first introduced to Next Gen, so that is my track. I can find something to appreciate in every single one of the series. Yes, even Voyager. That one's hard to find, but I can find it.
I appreciate that it's off the air.
But down deep inside, Star Trek to me is Next Generation. So I completely understand where you're coming from. Although, Captain Sisko had his merits as well.
I had to go with other shows with 40-year histories. Doctor Who. I think that pretty much everybody in America that's watching Doctor Who, Tom Baker, is their doctor.
He was the first one that people were exposed to back in the 1970s when it started airing here in the States.
That being said, of the original series Doctor Who's, I've always found my favorite actor to be Peter Davison. Of the original companions, I've always found Elizabeth Sladen to be my favorite actress, and I just love Sarah Jane Smith. I cannot say enough positive things about her. But Chris Eccleston and Billy Piper really, despite the fact that it's 13 episodes, they have won my heart. Rose Tyler is absolutely my favorite companion. I cannot imagine an actor who took 13 episodes and did more with it and just had more fun than Christopher Eccleston.
And David Tennant has done a wonderful job as well.
Oh, I have no arguments with that. But that place in my heart where you find something and you can latch onto that, despite the fact that the first Doctor I ever saw was Tom Baker, and my favorite of the originals is Peter Davison, that team of Eccleston and Piper just pushed that just a little bit to the side and said, I have a place in your heart too.
So what's our point to all of that? You call yourself a Star Trek fan, be a Star Trek fan. Embrace the ideals of your show, and have an open mind. We, of course, want to take a couple of moments to talk about upcoming TORP projects. Our current goal is to have Act 2 of Yours, Minds, and Ours out by either Christmas or New Year's, knock on wood. We've also started gearing up for our 4th episode, which will include a young man by the name of Tommy Gauthier, who was the winner of our Casting for Charity event at WindyCon this year. TWRP donated several items to the WindyCon charity and managed to raise $82 for the obesity fund during their auction. The highlight of this was auctioning off a quote-unquote walk-on role in our next episode. That was won by Tommy. Welcome aboard, Tommy, and we're looking forward to working with you. And we are pleased to announce that we have begun pre-production on an original concept show that we hope to be talking about more in the very near future. We want to take the opportunity to wish everybody a happy and safe holiday season. Have a very Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year.
As always, TWRPcast encourages you to send your opinions and your thoughts. Please write Jim at twrponline.net.
don't forget to go to the other 12 Days of Trek Christmas featured presentations. TorpCast has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions. Copyright 2007.
Drink it, it's green!